This week's episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by the good folks supporting us over on patreon.com/StarWarsReport.
Let's do the show, folks!
Come, come, come!
And who might you be?
It's the Star Wars Report!
Star Wars Report!
Woo! Star Wars Report! The place for Star Wars news, features, interviews, and more.
Then we can do something epic!
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate.
The Force. It's calling to you. Just let it in.
And here we are in another episode of the Star Wars Report. I'm Bruce Gibson. Thank you for joining us. We're going to talk about Han Solo. Of course, yes, I know, we've seen the Solo movie, but we're going to talk about Han Solo, the character, not just in Solo, but in the original trilogy, in The Force Awakens, in novels, comics, anything else that Han Solo had appeared in. We're going to talk about Han Solo, but we also have news. We have Boba's Bounty, and with me to do this, I'm going to go in alphabetical order because we have the three M's. We have Mark, Matt, and Michael. Mark, how you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good.
Whistler!
Yeah.
We haven't had Whistler in a while. I'm very excited now. I'm like, really, like, yay!
It's a true party.
I'm excited. And Matt Rushing is with us in the house once again.
Hello there.
Hello there. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Honestly, it's just great to be back here as we're recording on a Friday night and hanging out with Star Wars friends.
Absolutely. What a better way to spend a Friday night. And also, last but not least, Michael Morris. How are you?
Hey, hey. Let's be honest, Matt. You're not back. You've been here all week.
Bruce's couch is really comfortable. I mean, that's really just what it is. Like, actually, which is funny because I'll be at Bruce's this later this year for Dragon Con. So, yes, but Bruce actually does have really comfy couches.
I do. That's so funny because Scott Rifen on a previous episode talked about my couch, mm-hmm. and he's never been on it before.
Yeah, luckily I had the couch myself. Scott is vacated. Otherwise, it would have been really cramped with both grown men trying to take the couch. But yeah, it's really comfortable.
Wow. I feel like I should get on the couch right now because there's been times when Riley and I have done shows in person together and he'll be on one of my couches and I'm on the other and we're just lounging out doing a show. I mean, usually you sit up and you're at a mic. We'd actually be like, well, I'm laying down more than anything. He's usually sitting up more, but I'm lounging, feeding myself grapes. I mean, it's terrific.
Wow, this is more than I needed to know.
Nice. I'm not doing that now. I'm actually sitting in a chair, so that's a good thing.
Thank God.
So let's go ahead and talk about Han Solo. Have you heard of this guy? He's some character in Star Wars. Mm. Well, think about that for a second. He was in the most recent Star Wars movie that came out called Solo, a Star Wars story, which really confused me because when I went in, I was like, oh, I thought this was about Ben Solo because they didn't say in the title it was Ben.
Oh, I thought
or
it was
going
to be about Anakin Solo, which is really shocking.
That would really have been shocking, yeah. For sure. But no, we want to talk about Han Solo. And one of the things is, you know, we've had him now, of course, in the original trilogy. We had him then 30 years later in The Force Awakens. Then we had him recently here in Solo, a Star Wars story. So just looking at the five films, now that Solo has come out, has that movie changed your perception of the Han Solo character or enhanced the character? Or may have even ruined the character for you.
Or has it changed our life?
Mm-hmm.
I could tell it's changed yours, Michael.
Solo has changed my life. I wear capes now.
He does. He looks just like Count Chocula.
He wore capes before, though.
No, only in cover art.
You're setting up a closet like Lando has now. With
I am, one cape at a time. I'm going to have that closet.
Before long, Christy's going to walk in and it's like, maybe too many capes.
Exactly.
Way too many.
Well, I don't know. She'll be wearing them, too. I've seen her wear one of your capes. So,
see, I'm one that came around on this one. I wasn't really sure I wanted to have this Han Solo I'm having a hard time unlearning the Solo that I loved for so many years. But honestly, the more I watch this one, the more I'm coming around to the all aspects of it. I actually want to know more about the parts that we kind of flashed past. I'd love to actually have like maybe a kid's book with Han in Imperial service as he was, you know, making his way to Beckett, kind of.
Ooh, yeah, that's good. I like that idea. Mm-hmm.
It's funny because you mentioned that, and I've been doing a slow, well, not really slow, but I've been doing this reread, and it's not really a reread because I'd never read them, the A.C. Crispin books, mm-hmm. the Han Solo trilogy.
Is that the one with the Targaryen or Trogo, the cat? Dude?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's Game of Thrones.
And so what's fascinating to me is that, like the movie Solo, the books here kind of gloss over the fact that Han was a part of the Empire. Like, they don't really go into that, which I was a little disappointed, especially with the books there, because I wanted more of that time period. I wanted to see what Han was like as a part of the Academy. They do a good job of it, I think, in the movie, by showing you that Han just isn't cut out for that kind of thing, really. But to me, yeah, I'm with you. I feel like I'm fascinated to know now more about Han Solo, because I feel like this movie brought him to life in a way that he hadn't been brought to life before. Han was always a fun character to me, but now he has some depth to him, which I really find interesting. And to me, and John Mills and I have talked about this on Aggressive Negotiations, which is this movie and the way that it actually connects with what we get in The Force Awakens actually makes a lot of sense. And it really brings this character to life. And it actually even helps me understand the character in The Force Awakens and kind of redeems that movie in a lot of ways for me. So to me, all in all, I think it, you know, Solo has just done wonders for my love of that character. So, I mean, I couldn't be more thankful for what the Kasdans did with the script, and then what I think Ron Howard brought with the direction and everything. It's fantastic.
What was the connection for you between Solo and The Force Awakens? Does it have to do, because if we think about The Force Awakens, where Han is, he has, you know, he's back being a smuggler again on his own. He's left Leia. He thinks, you know, he hasn't been a good father to Ben. So what did you see in Solo that bridges to that?
Yeah, I think what it did for me with The Force Awakens, you know, I always struggled with the fact that Han would leave. But I think what it did for me is show that Han felt helpless in that situation. And like, it was something he couldn't talk his way out of. He couldn't, you know, fix it. You know, mm-hmm. Han likes to fix things. He likes to talk his way out of things. And this, his troubles with Ben, and that's not something he could fix, he didn't feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of see that in the movie. Like, Han is good at getting himself out of situations, but when it comes to family and when it comes to raising a kid, it's not something you get yourself out of, right? He couldn't end up making the decision for his son. So I feel like that made him feel lost. And so when he says, and then Leia says, you know, we went back to what we knew, what we felt good at, it brought it together for me in a much better way. And I don't know if I'm explaining it well, but I just feel like definitely the Kasdans were conscious of, and especially Larry, very conscious of what they had done in The Force Awakens, and just trying to plant some seeds in there so that you could see how Han could be that character. And too, in the end, you know, I mean, Han redeems himself. He goes back to save his son. You know, he does the same thing in a lot of ways that Kira did for him in the movie, mm-hmm. you know, of trying to give him a second chance.
It sounds like we need Luke, a Star Wars story to bridge to The Last Jedi.
I think we had that, wasn't it?
Yeah, that would be helpful, actually. Yeah, context is king. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I just noticed Michael really is wearing a cape right now. I didn't even notice you were wearing the cape.
I know, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, is that really? Like,
so it's, truthfully, the only reason I'm wearing it is because it's freezing in the house. And so I'm like, well, I was going to put it on just to be funny, but now it's actually kind of cold.
It's 90 degrees outside.
Freezing, man. That was me this weekend. Listen to it on the Rogue Transmissions.
Yeah, but we had a good Rogue Transmissions of Mark talking about the snow he was in.
But Christine has the AC just a pumping, and I'm like, I can't yell because we're podcasting, and she's not answering her phone, so just put the cape on. That's fine. But to expand on what Matt was saying, and this may seem like a really weird pull, but one thing that came to my mind was the line from the movie Walk the Line, where Johnny Cash says that he says, oh, it'll work itself out. And then June says, no, other people work it out for you, and you just think it works. You think it works itself out. And I kind of feel like that's a mentality that Han Solo has. And he doesn't realize that, like, no, like, the only reason your plan worked out and that, you know, Crimson Dawn or you know, Darth Maul didn't hunt you down, I guess just Maul now, but didn't hunt you down and murder you, is because Kira, like, sacrificed herself for you. You know, she decided to go back and basically be like, oh no, yeah, this is, you know, Beckett did it, and, you know, not rat you out so you can go free, and she's going to be imprisoned, and you not realizing that, no, the plan didn't work out, like, someone else had to.
Damn, you know, Michael, sort of you take just totally that bullet. Killed my buzz for that. That's so depressing. I didn't realize that.
But
I thought she also betrayed him. Now she sacrificed herself. Damn, that's love, man. Yeah. Oh.
I also think that it talks, I mean, seeing this movie also helps explain, too, just where Han comes from. So when you think about him trying to raise a son, mm-hmm. Han doesn't know what it means to be a good man, really. Nobody taught him anything.
Well, and the joke of what's it mean to be a Solo.
Yeah. I mean, he has an innate sense of kind of some right and wrong, but the actual, like, nurturing of another human being into being a good human being, he doesn't have that. And especially, we get the idea that Ben is a character who has some darkness in him, and Han, obviously, and Leia don't seem to know exactly how to curb that in their son. And so, you know, Leia at least understands what it's like to have good parents. You know, Bail mm-hmm. and Rhea seem to have been great parents to her. But Han doesn't have any of that. So, again, I thought this movie was just a great job of helping to explain why things may have gone wrong with Ben. Because, and it's not necessarily it's Han wasn't trying or that it's his fault. He's just not necessarily completely equipped to be the world's greatest father, you know, mm-hmm. Even though it seems like he probably tried the best he could do. So
this Han's insecure. I mean, that's, and it's yeah. becoming a father that really unravels his security. I mean, at that point, he's very cocksure, you know, he's full of himself. And then it comes into the element of I'm responsible for someone else. And he has proof he can't really do it. I mean, Chewie's the only one that really he's been able to take care of, but that's mostly because Chewie's been taking care of himself along the way. I mean, I was always thinking about the differences between, you know, this Han Solo as a father and the Legends one, you know, because he had his daughter related with him with all the mechanical aspects, you know, where it came to the love of the ship and stuff. And it doesn't seem like there was any of that passed along to Ben. And yet Han always kind of like didn't quite understand Jason. So that kind of works, you know, it's like he still has that with Ben. And yet Anakin was always kind of like also a little chip off the Solo block. And the second child along the way is always a little easier. So, you know, Han kind of at that point kind of fallen into the role of being a father at that point. But yeah, I think about the Jason Solo aspect, and he was completely at a loss of words with Jason a lot. So, I mean, that part of Han still really feels true for me, for what I felt like that's what Han should have been. But when I get to that point where I go to this movie and I look back on, like you were saying, Matt, when you look back on The Force Awakens, I'm able to appreciate the betrayal a lot more than what it was. I remember when it happened, like that was, I felt more betrayed by Jace or Ben at that moment than by my own, you know, eyes watching it happen. I'm like, why are you doing this? You little, like, I thought Kylo Ren was going to be a character I was going to love forever. And then he did that. And I was just like, now I got to question all everything.
So, well, I mean, you talked about like him being insecure, but I mean, that's, he's always been kind of insecure. Think back to The Empire Strikes Back, where it's like, he's going to leave, but he's making this big deal about leaving because he wants Leia to, you know, pine over him or whatever, and she's just like, yeah, whatever, you know. So I don't know. I think that kind of works in with his insecurity and his issues with, you know, leaving from someone that he cares about.
Mm-hmm. Well, even now he responds to Scruffy, her, you know, who's Scruffy looking?
Well, and it plays in too because, you know, the great thing about, you know, the other things that we see even just around Solo, the Most Wanted book and Last Shot both do a great job of expanding on what we get with the movie and helping to explain this character. And, you know, Most Wanted shows how he is very good at kind of talking his way out of things, but thinking on his feet. You know, when everything goes wrong, Han is the guy who is pretty good at coming up with a plan to get himself out of things.
Thermal and, detonator.
And, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the way it goes. and then the next part you get is him in Last Shot really struggling with what it means to be a father and to be a husband and not understanding how to do that. Because he feels so bad at it. And what's funny is that he doesn't have any friends there to tell him that, like, dude, we all feel bad about being a dad at the beginning. Like, none of us know what we're doing, mm-hmm. you know, like, so, and the one thing that he has is he has Leia there to be understanding and to, because she knows who he is, she understands where he's coming from, and she's kind of able to talk him off the ledge. And they find a way to be able to communicate together that brings them back together stronger than ever. And the best part about it is, and you can see this, you know, Han seems to be somebody who wants his freedom, but he also wants to be loved. And Leia loves him like none other. And that's one of the things I thought that Daniel Jose Older did so well in Last Shot was showing how their relationship is so good for each other, mm-hmm. That they really do help each other out. And I loved that. And it also made it seem like, okay, I can understand then how those characters have a really hard time when their family falls apart in the sense that their son starts to act up and they don't know how to handle it. And that they ship him off to Luke, not in a bad way. I think they do it with the best intentions, but then they also feel bad about that. So it's like, there's all this drama that goes on. Unfortunately, so much of that drama we know so little about. Mm-hmm. So we're still left with having to read so much between the lines. Whereas if we had had those stories, I think it would have really helped when we finally saw the film and, you know, Ben and Han are standing there. And when you see the movie, you don't really have a context for their relationship much.
No.
Back then. Now we have more and more context slowly creeping in, so it slowly makes it better. But still, I mean, there's so much of that story. We were talking even before we started Rogue Transmissions tonight just about that idea that there's still so much we don't know, you know?
Yeah.
And it hurts sometimes the depth that they want to have with those characters.
Yeah, I so want to know more about Ben Solo. You know, I want to know more about Ben Solo's backstory than Han Solo's backstory. Mm-hmm. And so I was joking about going to see Solo and expecting it to be about Ben. Of course, I knew it was about Han, but really, I would love to have more of a Ben Solo story because I want to know why. Where, and I know we're talking more about Han Solo, but in this case, you know, what happened with Han and Leia in the raising of Ben, and what happened then when Luke took him, and how did Snoke get involved? And it's like Ben almost represents this bad seed that kind of tore apart our favorite three characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of the result of what we see in Han in The Force Awakens and what we see of Luke in The Last Jedi. And it's it's all part of this one guy that we really don't know. You know, he's an offspring of them, yet he ruins them.
To be a gnat on the wall when the conversation about what happened at Luke's order when the order fell between Luke, Leia, and Han. Like, I mean, that could go down so many different ways, but in most of them, I see Leia just, like, railing Luke. Like, I don't see this ending well for Luke at all. Like, and then he goes off and hides.
It kind of seems like they never had that conversation. Because you don't get that feeling from The Last Jedi that they've ever had those conversations. See, Luke just seems to disappear.
And even that would be interesting because that sets up a story of, okay, if the order collapses and Luke just disappears in shame, right? Leia has no idea. Like, she shows up to visit her son. It's all in ruins. Kylo Ren shows up with the First Order at some point. He pulls off her helmet. Like, that would be one heck of a, just for her, mind-blown moment. Like, what happened to my son?
That was a really awkward parents' day at the Jedi Academy.
It was. It was really awkward. It was Leia's not so good, very bad, rotten, no good day. So, I think as we're talking, it just seems like, again, you kind of come down to this fact, like, there's so much that if there was some context and backstory with this, it would mean so much more to us. And I do think, you know, again, even just kind of getting back to Solo, I think that Solo does a great job of kind of filling in some of that context for who Han Solo is, why he is the way he is. And to me, it makes him a much better character, even now when I watch the original trilogy, just because we have that, you know? And
so have you watched the original trilogy since you watched Solo?
I went through and watched Rogue One, and then we watched Star Wars, and it was actually really fun to watch Star Wars because you can tell, like, Han has been really, I mean, there would have been other burns, right, that would have made him that person that was so dedicated to, like, look, I'm only here for the money. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting to me is that now you see him with Luke, and I wonder if Luke triggers something in Han that reminds him of the person he couldn't save, which is Kira.
Well, I even feel like that there's a lot of Luke, like Han's personality in Solo reflects Luke. Yeah. And it's like, well, okay, maybe that's why because he's like, you know, that was kind of me 10 years ago. I kind of get it because he even asks, he's like, oh, how hard is, you know, a jump to light speed? You know, and of course, you know, Luke's like, he asked the same question and he's like, oh, it's jumping to light speed's not like dusting crops, kid.
Well, and that could reset for Han an aspect of Beckett, because the last time Han was reminded of himself at that age was when Beckett came into his life. And so now Han's being the cynical one and presenting that front that Beckett did for him.
Yeah, Han's the Beckett in A New Hope, and Luke is the young Solo.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then what's interesting, again, you move all the way to The Force Awakens, and then you understand why Han is so drawn to somebody like Rey and Finn, because both of them kind of remind him of parts of himself. Of course, Luke. You know, so it's like there is that wonderful connection there, and I think what is disappointing is that that kind of motif nature did not continue into the next film, because I feel like when you start to put all these pieces together, like Solo is helping inform what you see in The Force Awakens, and that feels like, a you know, all these motifs built on motifs, you know, the tone poem, but done in that kind of way. And when you really see then some of the things that The Force Awakens does, and you look in this light from like Solo and stuff, you're like, oh, okay, I really start to get maybe more of some of the depth they're going for with the characters.
Hi, this is Ashley Eckstein, voice of Ahsoka Tano from Star Wars and founder of Her Universe, and this is the Star Wars Report.
So when it comes to Han Solo, you know, when I saw Star Wars, A New Hope, before it was A New Hope, but when I saw that movie, I did not really care that much for Han Solo. I mean,
was it because he shot first and you were like, he's mean?
Yes. I only liked him after the special edition. No. No, I didn't really. It's not that I hated the character, but it was one of those things where, to me, Luke Skywalker, in my mind, was the hero, and Han was kind of like, well, yeah, he was on the good side, yeah, but wishy-washy, but he could probably turn on Luke and the others, and, you know, like, mm-hmm. I didn't trust him and stuff, and everybody, you know, at my school was like, oh, I love Han Solo, Han Solo. I was like, he's a jerk, in my mind. He was a jerk. Over time, he grew on me. The older I got, I liked him, but I'm kind of like with, like you are, Matt, it's like, I've always come to really appreciate and like Han Solo over the years, but after seeing Solo, I really love this character, but yet I have not gone back and rewatched the original trilogy for the 500th first time or the Force Awakens to see if my perception, if I'm looking at the character a little differently in those movies than I used to now that I've seen Solo. And that's the great thing that I love about these new Star Wars movies, or even when the prequels came out, because when you go to watch a movie you've seen hundreds of times, your perception starts to change because you have different backstories. And I almost feel like Han is that nicer character than I thought years ago when I saw him, where I thought he was a jerk. After seeing Solo, a Star Wars story, I don't think I would look at Han Solo in A New Hope as being kind of a jerk, but kind of a guy that's just trying to be cool, but he's a really nice guy.
Those compliments are perfect. I mean, we call it the Stover effect on Beyond the Films. I mean, Matthew Stover's novelization for Revenge of the Sith accompanies that film in ways that are just masterful. I mean, there's whole elements that should have been in the movie because they just make the scenes work so much better. Like when Palpatine has his conversation with Mace about the philosophical nature of the Sith and then turns the recording to the Senate and gives it to him as evidence. She's like, oh my God, it was so beautifully done.
Well, Matt, I like what you were also saying about the connections between The Force Awakens and Solo, a Star Wars story. I'm still struggling with the title. It just, Solo just doesn't work for me. But so I keep saying Solo,
a Solo
Star Wars
and
story.
The Kessel Run.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Well, even then, I'm not too sure about. But I like that a little better. But
Solo and the Crimson Dawn. Crimson Dawn.
Yeah. I like that one.
A Star Wars story. That's the biggest thing.
I'm right there with you. It's like, can you imagine like how cool it would be if it was like Han Solo and the Rise of Crimson Dawn, and you got, you know, Tom Kane doing the announcer voice at the beginning of the movie? That'd be kind of cool.
It's a lawless time.
Yeah, exactly.
The Adventures of Han Solo. Which, by the way, just real quick, I saw Barnes & Noble has those three A.C. Crispin Han Solo stories in a hardcover called Adventures of Han Solo right now. So go look for those if you want that. But what was I going to say? Oh, man, now I don't remember. But Kira and Leia. The one thing I really love watching in Solo is his relationship with Kira. And I'm very interested, even though I've seen the original trilogies a million times, to watch those and think, hey, now I even see more depth in his relationship with Leia because of a relationship he had with Kira. Have you guys thought about that at all? Or
well, I'm like, laughing because we did a whole show on it in Aggressive Negotiations.
Has that come out yet?
Yeah. About Kira and Han and Leia and what that all means. And I mean, I do. I really think that Kira has a huge impact on who Han is. And there's a part of me, and there's definitely a part of John Mills, where you think Kira could have been the perfect person for Han because she truly understands who he is, right? She truly gets who he is. But their life has led them in completely different paths, and it's just not going to be possible. But there's always going to be that sense of, I feel like, she is the personification of the perfect girl for him because he romanticizes her. And I think probably even by the end of Solo, even though she's left without him, there's still always going to be some romanticization of him, right? Mm-hmm. Of her.
Right.
And it's not until Leia where he kind of meets somebody who's similar, strong personality, very whip smart, can make a plan, you know, and yet at the same time, especially I take it last shot, Leia has a patience with trying to understand who he is and what he needs and who he's become so that they can become, you know, one person, you know, like what happens when you get married. And so I think that Kira does have a huge impact on who Han is. And I also kind of think it's what makes him into the character that we get, which is somebody who just goes for the cheap romantic thrills, you know, in the one night stands, because he's still kind of pining over something he lost. And until Leia comes around, there really isn't anybody else who just kind of lights his fire like that.
Well, I think now that you mentioned that, I think I did hear that episode you guys talking about that, because I think, and maybe I heard this from somewhere else, but maybe the relationship with Kira was the one that was meant to be, which eventually led to the downfall of his relationship with Leia. That's why it couldn't really work by the time we get to The Force Awakens. Yeah, it has something to do with Ben, but there may be something more there that he's never been able to really give in to Leia the way he would like to, because he's always carrying that torch for Kira.
And so, I don't agree with that reading personally, but I mean, I could see you could make that argument.
I want to see more Kira, though. I mean, like, I'd like to maybe see her come back and either, like, almost become a foil for Han down the way. Like, eventually she starts to, you know, get angry. But then Michael blew my mind with the aspect of, you know, she jumped on the grenade for him, which would make that even more twisted. You know, like, she finally has an opportunity to come back and greet Han, and there's Leia. And, you know, instead of being happy for Han, she starts to become bitter and resentful and tries to take out Leia. And then by the time Han figures out who's behind it, it's Kira. And you know, like, that could become very twisted and get really cool. But I don't know if we'll ever get there.
Well, see, I think this is the thing that you could do. You don't necessarily have to make a Solo sequel in the sense of, like, it's Solo 2.
Mm-hmm.
But you could do... You could continue it with this underworld aspect, and you can involve Kira and Maul and Boba Fett, throw them all in a mix with the Hutts, you know, and Jabba and all this stuff, and like create all of these really fantastic stories. I mean, you could make an incredible trilogy with this story if you do that. And, or, I mean, you could do a TV show, but, you know, I don't think you're going to get, Aaron Reich and stuff to fulfill his contract by doing a TV show like that. So, yeah. I mean, you do two more movies. You have an incredible trilogy here. And it doesn't just have to be Han Solo, but he can be a huge part of it. And then, you know, Kira on the other side. And it could be Kira's trying to take down Crimson Dawn from the inside, or it could be the thing where she's trying to take over Crimson Dawn from Maul. You know, so either way you do it, you've got to great setup here.
Yeah.
I think there's so many different directions they could go.
Yes.
Because the thing is, like, as much as I would love a Solo sequel, I also wouldn't mind if they just decided to do sort of a spiritual sequel, you know, where the next one is like, I don't know, they call it Crimson Dawn or you know, Maul or Kira or whatever, you know, and it's basically just Kira and Maul. You know, she's the main, you know, she's the protagonist, Maul's the antagonist, and you have that story, and you don't even have to have Han in that story, you know, to make it good. But at the same time, you could do a Lando story and then, you know, pull Han back in for that. Like, I think there's so many different options. I think there's still plenty of places to go with Han and his own story, so...
Or we could just get the Chewie story about how he finally finds his wife and kids and get the true story of the life debt.
But does he have a wife and kids?
And I mean, it could just be like the holiday special all over again.
Or just re-release the holiday special and call it a Star Wars story.
Ouch.
Well, I had this idea the other day. I was thinking about Rogue One and Solo, and they're both have that line, a Star Wars story. And I thought, what if they made one, two, maybe even three more movies, something a Star Wars story? And by the end of that, they all connect. Solo's the first, then these others, and they all lead up to Rogue One. All of a sudden, you see connections between those, and those almost become their own saga films, which I think would be cool, because you can put Maul in that, you can have Saul Guerrera, you can have from Rogue One. I mean, you can tie in different elements. It all starts to connect, all leading into Rogue One.
Kind of like the Jude Watson series, how they lead into the movies. Like, no, yeah. I'm down.
No, I like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the thing I was thinking of. Like, you, with Solo, and then where it left it, you have all of these pieces on the board that you can use, you know? And I just kind of, the thought process just from reading A.C. Crispin's books, you know, you bring in the Hutt cartels, you bring in Black Sun, the Pikes, you know, Crimson Dawn. You could have this whole thing about this underworld war that happens. And it could be this really interesting bit where they do a thing where they explain why the underworld isn't quite as big during the original trilogy, because Palpatine stokes the fires of a war there, you know, and lets them peter themselves out, you know, like kill themselves off. So, I mean, and that could be just hypothetically, that could also be the reason why he is maybe somewhat responsible for making sure that Maul is stranded on Malachor for all those years too. Like, so to me, that would be something that makes sense, because at the very end of Solo, Enfys Nest talks about the idea that the cartels are in league with the Empire.
Right.
So what if, just like with the Clone Wars, Palpatine is using all of them as what he needs right now, but he will slowly get rid of them, just like he does the Imperial, I mean, the Senate in, you know, episode 4. So it's like, there's so much you can do here. It's so rich, and it's just so disappointing to see people not going to see this movie, because it's great. And the depth that we're talking about the Star Wars universe right now, yeah, it's not Force related, but we're talking about some real depth with all of the parts of the universe that we only really got in the Clone Wars, which is the underworld. It's huge. Like, there's a whole other part of the galaxy. Then it doesn't have to just be the Empire and the Rebellion. The underworld is a whole new game for us to play in.
So many casual fans are terrified they're going to become like us and addicted. That's the problem.
And a lot of, like, kind of what you're talking about, Matt, really reminds me of Shadows of the Empire, which is a book I know a lot of people don't care for, but I love that book. So I don't get why certain people don't care for it. But, well, actually, I know why, but it's silly.
Maybe it has to do with Shizor and Dash Rendar, or?
Kind of, yeah. Basically, they say Dash Rendar's
Han Solo, you know, basically, like,
Han 2.0.
Yeah, which I don't agree with. I don't think he's really that much like Han.
Yeah, but it's the same argument like when the people say that The Force Awakens is just a reboot of A New Hope. I mean, the argument could be made, but we know that wasn't the intent, but, you know, they both fly a YT Carillion Corvette. They both got a little sidekick that's a little bit different than a human, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, but like I said, I feel like that, especially when you're doing archetypes and stuff, that it's like, okay, yeah, it's like somebody rolled up a D&D character. It's like, yeah, you both chose rogues, but, you know, you chose a couple different feats and things. So there are the differences.
That's
there.
Why I always choose Rogue One. That, you know, I'm distinguishable. You know what I'm saying?
I'm a rogue too.
The other rogue. Right.
Yeah, what's up with the Star Wars stories? Rogue One, Solo, everything's a single title.
I think so. Here's the thing, because they want to put Star, which I think might at this point maybe something they might want to try to consider getting away from. You know, they have a Star Wars story in the title. So if you had like Han Solo and the Tyranny of Crimson Dawn, a Star Wars story, like, it's just kind of a lot. But the thing is, thinking about you know, because they are obviously trying to do something similar to the Marvel cinematic method or whatever, you know, they don't have to stamp Avengers or Marvel on every single movie. Right. So, you know, perhaps they should just do it. And then some people will go, is that a Star Wars movie? Or they can go, oh, that looks cool. Oh, I didn't realize that was going to be a Star Wars movie. Like, okay, that's kind of neat. You know, it's just something that they may not really need to be having to stamp that name on every single title.
Let's do it with the remake of Death Troopers.
Well, I mean, I don't want to go into this, but, you know, you can do marketing with a title. Let's just say it's called The Adventures of Han Solo. You can go out there and that's the title of the movie, but still in the marketing, you can put, you know, tags in there, a Star Wars story or a Star Wars adventure or whatever, you know, on the poster art and all these things and get people familiar that it's connected to Star Wars without it being in the title. But anyway, that's a whole nother thing. I do understand. I mean, I agree with their title of Solo, a Star. If you're going to use a Star Wars story, then that title's got to be short. So I agree.
Well,
with
I mean,
that.
It's in the end, it's like doing Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith, you know, like you could do Star Wars Solo, you know, I mean, and again, it could just be on the poster or whatever, but the title of the movie is Solo, but Star Wars is there. And I mean, obviously, I think in the end, the marketing is hugely important. We saw that with Solo and how you market a film. So Star Wars does need to be a big part of that. But,
it's interesting because Empire Strikes Back was that way when it came out. It was Star Wars in the, you know, and Empire, but everyone called it The Empire Strikes Back. No one called it
Star
Wars.
When the novelization comes out, you know it's going to be Star Wars Solo, a Star Wars story.
Probably.
But I agree with you, Michael. Like, the whole idea of a Star Wars story, and then it was an anthology before, and you know, it's like I feel like they just would have been better served just to say Rogue One Star Wars or Star Wars Rogue One. You know, it's like it's so much easier, it's so much cleaner, it's not a mess. You know, it doesn't have an episode number in the title, and this was really their downfall, I think, when they decided to start doing the whole thing where it was just Star Wars Force Awakens instead of it's episode 7, making a big deal about it's episode 8. That's where those distinctions come from. And when you stop doing that, then you do kind of like, then you run into the marketing thing. Well, if we do Solo, Star Wars Solo, it's like, well, is that a part of the episodes? I mean, like you have to have this question because you've taken out of the marketing for the other films the episode titles, which clearly delineate them as being saga films. And, you know, so it's like, again, it is all of the marketing, and they kind of put themselves up a creek without a paddle when they did that. And then they were trying to find a way to differentiate the story films from the saga films. And so, yeah, they already had that, but they messed it up.
Imagine if they kept anthology in like they originally planned. It would have been Solo, a Star Wars anthology. That just sounds so odd.
It does.
It doesn't make as much. Yeah. Again, it just is. Anyway, whatever.
It brings up the unspoken question of, well, after episode 9, what comes next? Are they all Star Wars stories? Are we still going to get some episode 1s in between the Star Wars stories?
Is it going to be and then that question becomes like, do you do when you have like Rian Johnson's trilogy? Do you figure out what the crux of that is and call it Star Wars something, blah, 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 blah? You know, like, or is it just Rian Johnson Star Wars? And then when they do the series, does that, I mean, so like they're going to have to figure that stuff out.
I know. Because I've been wondering about that too. How they're
the second movie is going to be like, this is an episode 2.
Right. Which makes sense in the sense that like, then you could do like, so if the Benioff and Weiss stuff is, you know, like Old Republic, then it becomes easy to delineate, you know, the Old Republic series that they might do, and you know, whatever it is that Rian Johnson's going to do, you know, Broom Boy and the Jedi of Mystery or whatever. So, you know, you can figure all that stuff out. Yeah. But it does become difficult, and it all comes down to you want to find a way to market it that ties it back to Star Wars in the best possible way.
Well, that's what they did with the New Jedi Order. It was just a bunch of standalones, duologies, and trilogies, but they were like, it's 19 books. It's like, yeah, but they're each one. Like, you've got two books in a series here, and they just all kind of bookend each other. Like, they made an era out of it. It was brilliant.
Man, that series was good. I liked that series.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, so... Okay, you know, we've covered Han Solo. I think we need to move on, but I think next week we want to talk about Lando Calrissian. I don't know if there's anybody here on the show that would like to talk about Lando next week, but you know, you're welcome to join us, especially the guy in the cape.
I see you trying to goad me there, Bruce. I see what you're doing.
It might just be Michael on the show, and that's it.
It's just
just Michael waxing eloquent for like an hour on Lando and his pants.
So I was on Twin Sons transmission last night.
No, you can't promote other shows. Stop that.
What? You like Eric.
I'm just kidding.
I give you a pass, Michael.
Yes, so, I do like Eric. Go on.
But we were talking, and Eric was talking about how, you know, how Star Wars has always meant so much to him and relating to characters and stuff, and talking about how much he related to Anakin when he had to say goodbye to his mother. And, you know, talking about his relationship with his mother was so strong. And, you know, he's like, I really felt that. And I said, you know, Eric, I totally get where you're coming from with that. I had that exact same feeling when Lando reached down for his green Psylocke and it wasn't there.
You took a really nice, sweet story and ruined it.
That's what I do here.
Oh, I love it.
Well, I say we move on to the news then.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
So, Mark, what do we got in news?
Well, details of where George Lucas's sequel trilogy would have, could have gone are springing up. Although I take this with a big grain of salt myself. Via Insight Editions, we got Star Wars creator George Lucas revealing new details about how he would have approached episodes 7 through 9 if he was still running Lucasfilm. There have been several reports and theories over the years about this topic of conversation, but here we get some real concrete information directly from Lucas himself, because he was prepared to take the franchise into a new microbiotic world featuring creatures called the Wills. Now, we know about that one. But there were some exceptionally powerful base little things. They got the ability to harness the Force, and he was going to play with it a little bit more than normal. In one of the books, the book Art of Star Wars, The Last Jedi, it contains a bit of this information where he says, the next three Star Wars films were going to get into a microbiotic world where there's this world of creatures that operates differently than we do. I call them the Wills, and the Wills are the ones who actually control the universe. They feed off the Force. If I'd have held on to the company, I could have done it, and then it would have been done. Of course, a lot of fans would have hated it, just like they did The Phantom Menace and everything, but at least the whole story from beginning to end would be told. And that's where I'm kind of like, I think he's playing with people. I don't necessarily.
You never know if
he's
just trolling.
Right? I mean, I remember once upon a time, back when he was saying it was, you know, a series of 9 films and 12 films, and he was jumping around and all that. But he had said that the next trilogy was going to be about the son redeeming, or the father redeeming the son, because the first one was about the son redeeming the father, and he was going to go the other direction. And that was why when we got to Fate of the Jedi and Legacy of the Force, it was so awesome that Luke got to kind of bring Ben Skywalker back into his fold when Jason went to the dark side. So, I mean, I was kind of surprised that didn't come out anywhere in this. And it's the fact that that didn't come up at all in this thing kind of left me going, I don't necessarily believe this is true. I don't know. What do you guys think about
this? I don't know if I believe it's... I don't know. It may have been an idea he had in his head, but I don't know if he had really put on paper.
Well, I think it may have... What I think is it was probably an element, not necessarily the... you know, the main theme,
yeah, the focus
that ran
of it,
through.
Yeah.
Right. I think that was something that he was going to explore along the way. I do think that it's a very interesting concept, but I have to kind of wonder how he would explore that. Like, is it going to be, you know, like Star Wars meets Inside Out? Like, how would he do that?
I'm I'm just thinking of them doing like a Star Wars Detours version of that.
Oh, that'd be excellent.
Well, I remember in the Clone Wars when we went and Yoda went to the birthplace of the Force, and my co-host on Beyond the Films, Nathan, was like, the Force is a giant STD. And I was like, when I went back and watched that, I'm like, okay, that does kind of come across like people are being infected by it. And I saw someone having a conversation about like, how cool would it be if these things like were possessing Force users? And I'm like, okay, now that might be actually kind of interesting.
So just a preview, John Mills and I are going to talk about this on the next Aggressive Negotiations coming out on Tuesday. Woo-hoo. But we looked at the Yoda arc specifically because of this news. And the Yoda arc along with the Mortis arc, I think it's very clear that George had some very big ideas of what the underpinnings of his galaxy were. And, you know, when you get into that Yoda arc, we're talking about the deepest aspect of the very building blocks of the foundation of the universe, which starts with the Force. You know, the cosmic force, the living force, how all that flows together, and then the way in which we understand the Force, which the planet we visit in the Yoda arc is the birthplace of midichlorians, which are the foundations of life. It's how we know what the Force is and people can access it. So, I mean, George was, I think, very much laying the foundation for this idea. And I think you're right, Michael. I don't think that us like going into some sort of like Ant-Man microbial world where we're all going to shrink down. No, I don't think that's the point. But I think that what George was really going to explore and drill down to was the big why of the Force, and why people can connect with it, and what balance and all. I feel like George was going to use that, but he was going to do it through characters, you know. We already know, too, George had the idea that you know, Luke was going to be off and he was going to run into a character called Kira, who came to get trained but turned into Rey. And then they were, you know, she was going to bring him back by the end of episode 7. And they were going to. So I feel like this journey would have been through the lens of Luke and Rey. And so it's not, people are reacting to this very strangely. It's like, you're not taking into account all the information that we have, you know? So I have a feeling that it could have been a pretty esoteric journey they might have been on in the second film, where they went to some of these type of places like Yoda did in the arc. But to me, like, if you're talking about making Star Wars different and bold and really just big and just totally going in a new direction, George was willing to go in a completely new direction. So
yeah, I would have loved to have seen that. I always love it when they twist things and add something new, go in a different direction. That's why I want, and I don't believe what I'm going to say, but I'm just throwing it out there. But
believe it.
Okay. I think Rey, because she's, you know, able to tap into the Force so quickly and use all these Force abilities, could she be a Wills?
I mean, well, but not just be microscopic. Being like, yeah,
well, she grew up.
Well,
real quick.
It's either that or she's. To me, I've felt like she is. She's the chosen one. So, yes. Like, she's the new chosen one. For, you know, what we know again from the Yoda arc and this whole idea of like the, you know, these chosen ones and the Force specifically chose Yoda in that arc, and they specifically had chosen Qui-Gon in that arc to do what they were going to do to lead, you know, and then to be able to give in this gift of being able to bring their consciousness back from the netherworld of the Force.
There's
so,
multiple chosen ones. There's not
but
a
no,
son.
No, yeah, Matt, it could have been. We were told right in The Last Jedi, her parents were nobody. Her parents were the Force, man.
I mean, yeah, she could be another virgin birth. How do we know? I mean,
virgin, there were no parents involved, man. She just, all of a sudden, she was there, and Unkar was pulling her away from a ship, and she was like, like, she had no clue.
Yeah, it could have been. You know, you never, see, that's the thing. Like, there's so much that you could do with this. And again, I feel like the reaction to this has been very strange. But right? Knowing George, it would have been about the characters, right? Because George even told Hamill that he said, you're going to be the Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're going to be the one passing on the torch to the next generation. And
instead,
I feel
the
like
Uncle Owen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much. And so, but I think that would have been so, I mean, just what he's talking about here and the conjunction, what we kind of have his idea for what episode 7 would have been. To me, this is fascinating, you know, because again, George is really trying to tie together everything he had done from the original trilogy, prequels, Clone Wars, and this, and the idea that he was trying to bring it all full circle. To me, sounds fantastic.
Well, he was right about one thing, though. A lot of fans would have hated it. I mean,
probably. Yeah.
I think in that one aspect, Lucas has had his eye on fandom and has called it as he's seen it for a long time. I mean, you know, he's always known people are going to equally love and hate what he does. And that is definitely something about our fandom right now that is on point.
Right. So then he decided, well, I'll sell Star Wars and Lucasfilm so that everybody will love what is put out there, since not everybody loves what I do. You know.
And there's been no controversy since.
No, not at all. Hey, real quick question on the parents being nobodies. That always kind of bothered me. Like, what does that mean? Your parents were nobodies. What does that mean? I mean, Anakin's parents were nobody. Well, he didn't even know who his father was. His mother was a slave. I mean, would you say she was a nobody? I mean, like, how would you describe, you know, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru? I mean, they were farmers. Were they nobodies? I mean, is it a bad thing that your parents aren't like something?
They're filthy junk
traders. We know the Nayberries were something because they had their own island.
Well, there you go. I just wonder, because my parents, I'm assuming, are nobodies.
I know my parents were nobodies because my great grandfather was like, I'm out of these Appalachian mountains. I'm going to change my name and run from the law.
I mean, my parents aren't famous or anything, or I mean, what? I don't know. I don't know what it's considered to be a nobody as a parent.
Well, yeah, and that is the thing where I think we're going to get an interesting answer in 9. I don't think that that's going to be the final answer, because I think I'm of the opinion that Kylo is playing her there, because he's trying to get her to want to join him, and the best way to do that is to tell her something like that, which is, you are nobody, your parents were nobodies, but you're not to me. He's manipulating her big time. That's manipulative like language right there. So
it's the left curve when Verger said there's no dark side, and then by the end of the series we're like, oh yeah, there's totally a dark side.
And then we find out that her dad is Darth Maul. Dun, dun, dun.
And her mom is Kira.
Oh my god,
the guy never dies.
Oh jeez.
I mean, wow.
Wouldn't she have red hair, though? I mean,
it's her soul that's red.
Well,
fiery.
I'm just saying, if Jason, his last name?
Yeah.
Was it Jason Syndulla? Did he take Hera's last name? I don't remember.
I believe he was.
I would think so.
But yeah, so he just had green hair.
Yeah, that was the weirdest. That didn't make any sense, because we've seen like half Twi'lek, half human kids, because the clone who had the kids with, you know, in the Clone Wars, like,
see, I was thinking that they had said at that time that was actually her kids from a previous relationship, but I may be wrong on that.
Yeah,
but,
I could be wrong too. So, but still, they seem to be a mixture between human and Twi'lek.
Yeah.
So, anyway, enough about Star Wars procreation.
I don't know enough on the subject.
Star Wars TV shows like The Clone Wars. Entertainment Tonight interviewed actor Jim Rash and revealed some Resistance character information. If you didn't know, Star Wars Resistance is an upcoming anime-inspired animated television series set to premiere this fall, which kind of blew me away. I was like, wait, really? This fall? Holy cow. It's going to be regularly airing on Disney. It's created by Dave Filoni, just like The Clone Wars. And it will have actors that you do know playing Poe Dameron and Captain Phasma, as well as some new ones. It's set a few years before the events of Episode 7, The Force Awakens, and it centers around the character Kazuda Ziono, which I'm probably saying it wrong, a young pilot in General Leia Organa's resistance tasked with spying on the growing threat of the First Order. Now, Jim Rash has revealed that Two of the actors in there, him and one other, will be playing quartermasters in charge of dispensing resistance equipment to members of the resistance. And Jim will be playing an alien. And we also know that Jim Rash is going to be doing it with Bobby Mahoyan. And they're both known from SNL.
Yeah, from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, so that's interesting. But we don't really know much more about it. But I'm assuming if it's coming this fall, we're about to get a plethora of details on this with the coming cons. I'm thinking we're about to have Splashdown Nation from, you know, the next 3 months. What do you guys
think? Yeah, I would think San Diego Comic-Con. Since they don't have any other big cons that they're doing, you know, this seems like the place you would get that kind of information.
That and Dragon Con, I think, would get another splash.
What about D23? Is that going on again this year?
No,
that's next year.
That's every other year now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
I just wonder if Moyahan's going to have a line in there where he says, "Man, Matt straight up sucks." Because that was the actor who said that
they
line.
They got to have a reference to Matt in there somewhere. That would be really funny.
Cool.
I'm excited about the show. You know, the fact that they're doing the kind of the anime style, I think will be really neat. I like that every animated show that they're doing kind of has its own feel to it. Mm-hmm. And that them going with the 2D animation, I think is really fun as well. And so I hope that the show will be great. And one of the things I think so many people have called for is to have more information about this time period. So them being a little bit nebulous and saying it's a few years before The Force Awakens, I think is fascinating. To me, the most interesting thing is obviously you're going to need a Leia in it. So who they get to play Leia, I wonder if they'll get the same person that was in Rebels to play Leia as well. Because I can't imagine not having a Leia in the Resistance since she is its leader. So
yeah.
See, I'm the opposite of you. I'm kind of wishing they would have set this after The Force Awakens because – to me, I mean, we're at a Cold War standoff,
like, right when The Last Jedi happens.
well,
it literally happens 2 days later, so there's not a lot of time.
And it's going to run for 9 seasons.
Think about this, though. I mean, we're in a Cold War, so every single engagement you're going to have with the First Order has to end up with nobody knowing about it, because otherwise you're at The Force Awakens already, because that's the first time, like, oh, hey, we got to get this information. Like, so there's that aspect. Like, so if it was after those events, then it's like we're at full on war. Like, I want to see that. I want to see the full on war. I don't really care to see the shadow war. So, like, I'm hoping that there's more plots beyond just that war aspect, because I want that war aspect. But again, that's not the setting. It's shadow war here. It's Cold War. We're not getting the full war until after episode 7.
And well, if they shot themselves in the foot that, because they set episode 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. Days at most after, so that you don't get that time period to play with. Which, so
true.
But you could have even think about you could have been showing something what's going on elsewhere after The Force Awakens. You know what's happening in another part of the galaxy while the events of the Last Jedi are kicking off. What's happening somewhere else? And it's a whole set of different characters.
Out Corellia is the Resistance's second base of operations, and they're now completely under siege, and they're holding off. And, you know, while Leia's group is dwindling down, this is why they weren't going to send reinforcements.
Right.
Because they couldn't.
They couldn't. And it's being run by Lando. Ah.
Yeah.
Ooh! Michael, so, tell me you're on board.
So, hey, here's the thing that I'm super pumped about with this. With it being 2D animation, that's going to be great on budget constraints. Because how many times did we hear with Clone Wars and Rebels especially that, you know, there was like you talked about, like, oh, okay, I was actually able to do this. So once we did the new season, I could get a new model. Like he even mentioned that Luke was actually just Ezra, just really far away. You know, they took the Ezra model and just put it far away and, you know, darkened it out or whatever, because when you're doing that stuff, you only have so much, you know, so much in the budget. And with it being, you know, 2D, it's just like, well, just draw it this way, you know?
So this maybe opens up.
Maybe Filoni is one of the artists because they go with his style.
Yeah, just might. See, now I'm getting more excited about this because the only thing we've seen is that, like, image. It's got, like, water in the background. I keep thinking, like, it's a beach movie.
They're just all hanging out at Maz's, you know?
Like, yeah, BB-8 looks like a beach ball, you know?
Or maybe it's Scarif. They've renovated.
It's not a tourist destination.
I'm not really sure what's left of Scarif after happened.
They did some remodeling, and, you know, it took them like 30 years, but they're good now.
Hey, they marketed it well. It's DreamWorks Animation's logo now.
Yeah. See, another idea for a novel. Whatever happened to Scarif? Coming back to it, the aftermath.
Well, we call it aftermath. Did the Ashes of Jedha comic, and it you know, Jedha turned into like half a planet. So I'm pretty sure that Scarif turned into something like that too.
True. Mm-hmm. I guess so.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. Well, that's coming. Resistance. When is that coming on? Is it this fall?
This fall, they say. Fall.
So what else is going on this fall, Mark?
Well, speaking of shooting off Death Stars at little insignificant targets, Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy stepping down this fall. I don't buy this one bit, personally, honestly. But according to The Ankler, a Hollywood Insider newsletter, her run at Lucasfilm, the president may soon be over, sooner than later. While Kathleen Kennedy worked wonders relaunching this property from the abyss of the Lucas prequel trilogy, man, and turning it into a bigger than ever all-devouring cultural force, there has to be more than some thought that it's time for new blood at the helm. The talk out there is a September changing of the guards. We'll see. And we'll see, indeed. I don't buy this one bit. I think, honestly, I feel like this is fabricated for the war that's going on in our fandom right now. You've got the two different sides taking pot shots. And by two sides, I mean the extremists on both ends or just seem to be at each other's throats constantly. And some of them play dirty. And this seems like somebody just throwing that out there. And then you got the people that are having fun, making stuff up as they go. And this just screams of a April Fool's prank at the worst possible time. I mean, for me, I don't take this seriously at all.
Yeah, with everything that's going on with fandom right now, it's like, oh, okay, perfect timing for this little nugget to pop up all of a sudden. Kathleen Kennedy is leaving, and people probably are saying, yeah, she needs to go because they're making threats.
But see, but that's kind of my thing on it. That's why I think that there could be, not saying that there is, but there could be validity to this. I mean, you know, to quote George Lucas, you know, he says, why would I keep making movies when people just yell at me for it? You know, Kathleen Kennedy can't even have her birthday announced on the Star Wars Twitter without getting death threats and stuff. You know, like the thing is, I could totally see her just being like, you know what? This isn't what I signed on for. Like, I did my thing and I'm ready to get out of here. Like, I don't want to.
When did she take over? When was that? Was that in
2013?
Was it 12?
12?
It was announced like in 2012. Maybe everything didn't fully go through till 2013, but I thought it was around summer 2012. So I would have thought it'd been 2013 would have been about the time that that she took over.
But I'm just wondering if she was under like a 5-year contract and that's coming up. I don't know.
See, and that would be smarter because no matter how she gets out, whether she steps down or she gets fired, either side is going to be coming up with their own narratives about it. One side's going to say she was fired, whether she stepped down or not. But if at least it was at the end of a contract or something like that, where it was like, well, this is, you know, we've always knew this was going to happen. This is going to happen. Put that all to rest, because that's the aspect about this that I don't trust anything anymore when it comes to this kind of stuff, because it just feels like people are out there having fun and being like, look how gullible these guys are. I made that up 3 weeks ago. Like, wow. And I've seen people do that kind of evil stuff.
This article, if it's the one I saw, actually has, they actually sort of list the source. They don't like completely out the source, but then actually give the credentials of that source. So,
yeah, we have that in the notes there.
Yeah.
So
it's
so maybe it's possible.
Mm-hmm. When I hear this, I'm like, oh yeah. So the woman who's helped Star Wars rake in billions since she's bought it is in danger, like because of like one movie that underperformed. Okay. You know what? Kevin Feige would have been done then because, you know, Iron Man came out huge, right? It was a big hit. The Hulk was not a hit.
No.
You know? And then Iron Man 2 was not great. You know? So it's like, every studio has films that may not live up to what they are hoped to. But the track record that Kathy Kennedy has here is ridiculous when it comes to the amount of money that she's made this studio now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whether or not there's been some bumps in the road, which we are all aware of all the bumps that have happened, she has done a good job. And I think even with Solo, I think she probably made the right call, because the movie that we got, I absolutely 100% adore.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine not having had Ron Howard at the helm and what this movie turned into. It just makes me think it could have been so much worse. So in the end, you know, this feels like the clickbait culture we live in instead of any kind of reality. And we just live in a world where, I think Mark's absolutely right, people just make stuff up, and I put that stuff in quotes because you know what I'm trying to say, to rile people up, you know? And this is just crap, you know? Whether or not I like every decision that's been made about Star Wars, honestly, Kathy Kennedy, I think, has done a pretty bang-up job with Star Wars for the most part, you know? I have liked 3 out of the 4 films. Good job, Kathy. I appreciate you. You know?
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, and that's the thing, too, is because, like I said, I think the article doesn't, which I haven't read it in a couple of days, but I want to say it doesn't state that she is being let go or fired or, but that she's making the decision. If it were, oh, yeah, they're axing her because Solo didn't do well, I would, no, get real. Like, there's no way. But like I said, the only reason why that I would say, you know what, that might be a thing, is that I could totally see her just saying, no, like, you know what, if all I'm going to get is hate, you know, from this point on, if I'm going to be treated exactly how George was treated, I'll just be done with it. I'll go do my own thing.
I don't even, because I hope that's not the case, because I just see her really, I see her as strong. I see her as a strong individual. And
well, I mean, the thing is, she was wanting to do, I can't remember what it was, but she had a project in mind with her husband, you know, prior to taking it on. So she had something else. So I don't think it's a case of her not being strong to say, you know what, this was a goal I had in mind. Right. This dress isn't worth it. I'm going to go do that thing.
Well, and she could have had in mind just for herself, you know, that she was going to be doing this for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, that's also true.
So,
yeah.
That's, you know, which I makes think. Sense. And for a lot of executives like this, you might not be here for more than, you know, 5 to 6 years. And so, you know, if that's the case, then it, but I think the way that this is written, it's so salacious and ridiculous. And it doesn't even matter in the end. Like, you know, if this actually comes out, that Kathy has decided to transition to somebody else, or yep. maybe,
Star
you know,
Wars
maybe,
moves on.
Maybe it's a thing where, you know, Kathy is maybe it could be Kathy's bringing in somebody to help her run the creative while she works on the business, you know, because Kathy's great at the business. And so there could be all sorts of things going on. But in the end, like, I just don't really care, you know, like,
well, I'd care, because I hope that it's not. I hope it's like, you know, said that if she's going to leave the company, I hope it's something on her terms. I hope that she's not being driven out either by her just saying, you know what, I'm tired of this crap, because, you know, Lucasfilm/Disney or whatever is going, nope, you're not hitting the numbers. You know, to me, that's, which, like I said, I don't believe that one for a minute. But, you know, if she were to step away, as much as I would hate that, I also can understand and respect if she's like, no, I have this thing I want to do. I'm like, you know what? I appreciate what you've done, but I get that. I like that scenario much better than one of the others.
I think if she is leaving, I think it will be on her own. I don't think it would have anything to do with what people are saying about her online. I, you know, think she just, whatever, ignores it. And I think if she were to leave now or next year, I would think that it was probably something she always had planned, that she wasn't going to stay for a long period of time, that when George was bringing her in, he probably pulled her off to the side and said, I'm going to sell the company and I want you to help through the transition.
Nope. And do it in the George Lucas voice.
Yeah. I want you to, you know, help through the transition. And, you know, and she's like, yeah, I'll come in here, help with the transition, take Lucasfilm in through Disney, set things up, put it on its feet. And she's done that. And now she's at a point where she can say, I did what I did. I don't want to work in a corporate atmosphere. I'm working at Disney now, but I was able to set up Lucasfilm for Disney. It's working on its own. Now you can bring in somebody else to kind of oversee things, as Matt said, or maybe more on the creative side. And I'm going to move on to my next projects or my other company or whatever it is, and be out of the corporate Disney umbrella.
Yep. See, and that would make more sense if she'd already let us know about this. I mean, they're talking about a changing of the guards in September. And that to me, it's like, if that was the case, like, then why not say something like that earlier?
No, you they would
get
they
people
wouldn't do that
to understand like this is coming. To me, this just seems like a guy I worked with when I worked at Kodak. Kodak got bought and turned into its own. We were the health imaging. You know, we made X-rays and stuff, but we became Carestream. And during that 6-month process, this guy I worked with, Matt, every day would make up new rumors about how half the people were going to get laid off, quit, fired, just to watch the day shift freak out when they show up an hour early for their shift. And I mean, every third week he would have something new and more insidious, and it was just like, man, you gotta knock it off. Like, people are going home just in tears because of you. And just, and he thrived on it. He was just a complete D-bag. And it's that kind of people that when I read this and I see, you know, them talking about the abyss of the Lucas prequel trilogy, and they talk about the all-devouring culture, where everything about this screams that type of person.
Well, and, the thing though, Mark, is that is kind of how things operate. Like, you know, Lord and Miller, that decision was already made and taken care of long before it was announced. Same thing with Colin Trevorrow and everything.
True.
Like, they wait for opportune times to announce this stuff. So I don't, if that were the case, I don't necessarily think that it would just be that, oh, they would have told us now or soon. I think they would actually say something like that getting closer to time.
Well, now they're in the net, too, of like, oh, crap, look what the fandom's doing. Well, how are we going to drop this now?
Well, the thing is, too, is that, you know, they knew, like, for instance, when they got rid of Lord Miller, they already had Ron Howard lined up by that point. You know, they're not going to, they're not going to announce that if they don't also have who's, you know, going to be taking over. And, you know, if they did, and like I said, if it all was an amicable thing and, you know, Kathy has other goals or whatever, then maybe she'd just be like, and so, you know, my predecessor will be Dave Filoni. Matt, what would that sound like?
Oh, yes.
What would Dave Filoni sound like doing his?
Well, I'll go ahead and do it. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Here we go. I'm putting together a Star Wars Report audio drama. Bruce is George Lucas. You'll be Dave Filoni. All right, sorry. I'll stop derailing, Bruce.
Dave, get used to the hate. Yeah, get used to it. All right, what else we got? We got one last thing on the news
before
we go to Wiz Bounty.
We do, and it's a happier note. Okay. We've got a new game coming, folks.
Yay.
Yes, Jedi Fallen Order, set between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, closer to Revenge of the Sith, of course. Jedi Fallen Order allows players to fill the shoes of an as-of-yet unidentified Jedi Knight surviving the galaxy that wants him or her dead in the wake of Order 66. The tone of the project is said to be dark in nature. Thank you. Befitting of the dark times, Obi-Wan Kenobi once described. Oh, and you'll get to wield a lightsaber. This is from Respawn Entertainment, and it will be coming holiday 2019. They haven't given us too much details. The thing I saw was a quick little interview, like between things on E3, and it wasn't much given at all. I know, Matt, we were talking about this before. It seemed like you had quite a bit of details on this. What do you know or think?
No, I just was reading everything when it came out, and I saw a little video that they had with it, and they showed the motion capture that they were doing with the lightsaber battles, which was awesome. So to me, this is exactly what I want. My favorite Star Wars games were, you know, the Jedi Outcast, you know, Jedi Academy that they did with the Dark Forces engines, you know, the KOTOR type thing where it is the story that we're talking about. And to me, this is what Star Wars gaming has lacked in a while since Force Unleashed. You know, we really haven't had that kind of thing. So this kind of seems like it might be almost like a Force Unleashed style game in the sense of like it's a good progressional story, but it's on the light side because you're a Padawan who's on the run. And just the idea of maybe getting to face Inquisitors and stuff is pretty awesome. I mean, so all that you could do with this game with the look of something like Battlefront, 100% sold. Sign me up. I'm there. Like, this sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm. One of Marvel's best comics out there is Kanan Jarrus when he was on the run. Mm-hmm. And think about this. I mean, we've got Kanan, okay, a Padawan, probably the closest that we have in canon to this story. You've got Ahsoka Tano, who was once a Padawan, could have been a Jedi, is something else. You've got Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi and Grandmaster Yoda. These are the only Jedi that we know of that has survived Order 66 that we've witnessed on the run afterwards to a degree. So I'm excited any which way we go about this. Like, this will be a fun story. I can't wait to see where they decide to take us. If we're going to go out into the Outer Rim or if we're going to go down to the Underworld. There's so many places a person could just disappear in the galaxy far, far away.
Somebody's not been reading the Darth Vader comic.
I have not been caught up. No, what do we know?
And there, I know Matt's, I think, caught up on it. And there are like six Jedi that survived in that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a librarian mm-hmm. that I know of. And I don't know
Jocasta knew. There was another Jedi, yes, that faces off against Vader. I'm not going to ruin anything, how that turns out, but dang.
Vader totally dies, right?
Yeah, Vader totally dies and then comes
spoilers.
Back to life. It's crazy.
Those cloners on Dantooine where they cloned Vader, and so even though he died, there was another Vader there to walk his place.
So I'm fine with whatever, but I kind of, just because I like the idea of, with the surviving Padawan, because like you said, Mark, like this is a story that we have gotten in the comics, but not too much. I think it could be kind of cool if they did, if like Kanan was the main character, because the thing is, Freddie Prinze Jr. is a huge gamer. He has his own Twitch channel and everything. So I think he would be down for it. He's even, you know, he's done stuff before. He's done other video games, and heck, he was even in, Wing Commander. So he's done video game related stuff in the past. And the thing is that, like, you get sort of some of that stuff from the comic, because, you know, with comics, it's just kind of brief, so it wouldn't necessarily...
There's your storyboard!
It wouldn't necessarily be a breaking, and it's like, oh, okay, so here's what happened, and then, you know, here's some gameplay that intertwined in it, and then we can jump to the future a little bit during that stuff that wasn't in the comics. Or... something I would like to see, and which I already know Matt's not on board with this, but I still love the idea. Because like you talked about with the Force Unleashed, I would love to see, you know, something sort of close to that, in that, you know, since we know Barriss Offee was, arrested, I think it'd be kind of neat that like, she's not there. So she's not getting executed at the time. And then you see where she sort of goes, like maybe she gets out of imprisonment or something like that and goes on the run, and she starts to kind of work her way back to the light, you know, and starts like growing as a character as all of this is going on. I think that would be a really interesting story.
I'm so down with you on that. I mean, because she wasn't necessarily wrong. I mean, her methods were completely backwards, but... the reason why she was doing what she was doing were for the right reasons. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a compelling character to start with. Like, I'm with you on that. And you could do it kind of like the way Force Unleashed 2 started off, where he was in prison and stuff. And, you know, have them come in. Well, we got another Jedi here. Well, we better take him out. You know, like when she finds out she's going to be executed and then finds a way to escape from the execution. Like, I think that would be a great way. And you don't even have to make her the main character. You could have her be someone that runs into the other character. And part of the conflict is that the other Jedi knows, like, dude, weren't you arrested? Like, you got Ahsoka Tano kicked out. Like,
or have her meet up with Ahsoka. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I think so cool is that you, there are places where she could run into Ahsoka at some point. She could run into a, no, she couldn't run into Asajj because that takes place before Revenge of the Sith, right? I'm talking about the Christy Golden book. I think that took place beforehand, so she couldn't.
Yeah, it takes place before the end of the Clone
Wars. Yeah, so she couldn't run into to Asajj, but still, I mean, Ahsoka. That's cool.
Yeah, Ahsoka could be the surviving Padawan in this game.
She could go to Dathomir and maybe talk to her Sith Witch spirit.
Do people even like Ahsoka? Oh, wait, they do now. They did used to when she first came out.
Isn't that an ironic shift? Isn't it? Yeah, everybody's loving her now. I love her. I was confused by her at first.
Man,
I think the most exciting thing about this game is that it's going to be a single player story game. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
those don't make money.
The best part about Battlefront was the single player story to me. I don't care about, you know, massive online playing against other people and that kind of stuff. I want to play a story. Part of that is true. Absolutely 100% true. But the other part is just I want to play a story that feels like I'm doing something. And again, like, you got to do this kind of thing in the Jedi Academy game, where you got to pick who your Padawan was going to be. You got to go through Luke's Academy. You got to pick what alien species you wanted to be. You got to do all these really neat things. And then, of course, you got to make the choice between the light and the dark side in the end, which that was really fun. So again, this could be one of those things where you could have a storyline that's canon, right? But you could also do a thing where you can allow people to make choices. So it's almost like choose your own adventure. So you really make this an experience that people can and just enjoy. And then you can play the replayability of being able to, okay, maybe you choose the dark side, maybe you choose the light side, you know, like make this something that is a real event for Star Wars fans and really add something to the gaming. Because again, since like the KOTOR games and you know, the original Force Unleashed, I can't really think of a game that seems like it could be this much fun and this enjoyable in the Star Wars universe, where you're just really kind of right in the middle of it.
And everybody was so excited when Jaden Kor jumped into the books too. They're like, hey, the character made it, it's me.
Yeah, I love the Force Unleashed games. Those are like the two games I actually got through from beginning to end. Like, most games I give up after a while. But yeah,
they were, I enjoyed both of them. Obviously the second one was a little bit lackluster comparatively, but still really fun. And of course, you know, what was so interesting too is that was the time period where George was kind of talking about, you know, maybe this is the official story of the rebellion, you know, like, he was playing with those ideas. And so George tried things. And so the idea that they're really going to go for this, I think is fantastic. Like, this is, again, is exactly the kind of thing that I hope that they'll continue to do. So,
well, it sounds like we're all going to buy it.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I'll be buying it.
Cool.
Well, you know, Michael, you were talking about, you know, it might not make money, but think about this. If it makes memories, right?
Like, that's
the
what
games
it's about.
Everybody loves the most. They didn't make a lot of money, but come people on, are EA. Like, we need this game back. Like, we got to have this game. Like,
those executives are in the boardroom right now saying, guys, it's not about making money. It's about making memories.
So, look, I said that facetiously because that's been essentially the line that EA's been taking as to why everything is, you know, online shooter games, because they're like, it's the only thing that makes money, that and FIFA. And it's like, oh, my God. Like, you know, so it looks like they're finally coming around on it.
Well, I mean, but see, that's what's so crazy is that's not true. I mean, look at what you've gotten with the Tomb Raider series. That is a massive game People love that. So create, make, if they're smart, you could create Fallen Order and you could create your own little tiny franchise.
Well, oh yeah.
Like that.
Because of the colon, I think it's going to be a franchise. You know, well, because and it's, so it's Star
think about
Wars
the term
Jedi.
Order. I mean, what if we start out with one and this Padawan finds a master and that master finds some more Padawans. They find some more and they start, you know, the Kukruk of Legends. I mean, that's what Kukruk did was he found a bunch of Padawans. He took them out, got them to safety. And then once he show up 140 years later, bam. Oh, hey, who's sitting on the council? Kukruk.
I mean, you could do so many things if you're really planning ahead. You know, this could be something that connects maybe later on past, you know, the sequel trilogy, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you could pick any time period.
Yeah, so
I think it's so funny how there's so many things now that take place between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. And I remember a time where that just felt like a zone that nothing was ever going to show up in. Like, it was like this empty zone. I'm like, man, if we could just get some stuff that takes place, like, even just a little bit before New Hope would be really cool. And now...
when that sliver shrank when we gave us the Clone Wars, oh my God, we're going there!
Right. So it's so cool, man. But anyway, it's time for Boba's Bounty.
He's worth a lot to me. As you wish.
Yeah, speaking of cool.
Speaking of cool, Mark, what's cool? What do you got for Boba's Bounty?
What's cool? Well, my good friend David Senden sent me a pair of the Han Solo dice that they had at the AMC fan festivals that they were doing for Solo, a Star Wars story. And I also got this really cool hologram at Ross for $5.99 that came with the next generation of heroes from The Last Jedi. That's Poe Dameron, Finn, and Rey with the Falcon flying in up above them. It's beautiful. Like, as I walk down to my studio, I look at it. It looks like the Falcon's turning midway to look at me every time. I just absolutely love it.
Cool. Wow. That's it?
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. I thought you were going to just like have more to say about that.
Well, I mean,
you know, I mean,
things,
a picture would be worth a thousand words. So Mark will take a picture and put it on Twitter for us.
I wasn't ready for him to stop, but okay.
You weren't prepared.
I wasn't prepared for that one. What about you, Matt? What do you got?
You know what? My Boba's Bounty this week is actually The Mighty Chewbacca in the Forest of Fear by Tom Engelberger, who is the author of the best-selling books, Origami Yoda series. But this book is the same type of book that the Guardians of the Wills book was. So it connects with the Solo film.
Oh, cool.
And this is mainly a book about Chewie, but of course Han is in it as well, and they've gotten themselves into a pickle, and Chewie is the one who's going to have to save the day. So I have to say, just like the Guardians of the Wills book, Bruce, you and I talked about that on the 602 Club.
I did, and I love how your shows are getting plugged throughout this episode.
Yeah, we broke that down. I think. But what's so fun about this book is that it's really well written. Because the book is kind of from Chewie's perspective, he narrates the book, the author does, and he does a really fun job of narrating the story and kind of, like, it's just, I'm having such a good time reading this book, and the mission that they're on here, actually involves K2SO as well. So it's, nice. This book is just, I'm having a blast. And so, you know, if you're just looking for some enjoyable Star Wars goodness to read, and you know, this probably, if I wasn't reading this week while I'm trying to read, you know, during my lunch break and stuff like that, you could probably finish this like in a few hours. But it's just I'm very surprised, and my review will be going up on Star Wars Report probably by the time you listen to this episode. So I highly encourage you, check this out. It's a lot of fun. And then of course, if you've got kids, this would be a great book to read with your kids.
Awesome. Now I'm a big fan of Chewie's perspective in books. There was like only one or two where we ever got him talking and they actually translated it. Is it anything like that where we actually get to see what Chewie's thinking?
The narrator does a good job of explaining what it is that Chewie's thinking. But he does it in a pretty clever way. So again, it's just, the mission that the mission that they're on right now, I'm kind of like in the middle of the book and I was reading it before we started, and I'm probably going to go back and read some more tonight just because I'm really fascinated to see how this wraps up. So I know I'm going on and on, but I love it when I get a Star Wars book like this and it just kind of surprises me. And the YA books have been some of the best that they've done, you know.
They really have.
I loved Most Wanted. I thought that was great as well. And so, you know, don't skip over these books just because they're for like middle grade or YA. They have things in there that's worth reading. If you're a big Star Wars fan, which you probably are listening to the Star Wars Report, it's fun. It's super fun. So yeah, go check it out.
Well, that sounds like what Star Wars is. It is for young people and it's fun.
Yes, absolutely. Both of those things. And I think Tom Engelberger, his sense of humor with the Origami Yoda series, which I read a few of those books, shines through in here with his narration of the story. And I think it works perfectly from Chewie's perspective and everything. So yeah, really well done.
There
so
you
far.
Go. Well, speaking of young people and fun, Michael, what have you got?
My Boba's mm-hmm. bounty is the friendships we made along the way.
Oh, good.
Wait, we're friends?
I've had a week. You all right there, Matt?
No, I'm just teasing you.
I don't know what you said. So I just saw you laughing.
Oh, I said, we're friends?
Oh, I thought so.
Come on, Michael. If I'm going to make fun of you, I need you to pay attention, man.
I know. I'm sorry.
You can't be friends if you're not paying attention.
I know. I'm the worst. It's my fault. So anyhow, I had a week, man. Christy was going to meet Ashley Eckstein, and so she was over there at the mall, and I'm like, how much is that Lando cape? And she's like, I can get it. It's on sale for $35. And I'm like, get me that Lando cape.
Yeah, that's a good deal, honestly.
Yeah, and so since I've been cold, I was like, you know what? I was going to just put this on for show, but it's actually kind of chilly, so I've been wearing the cape the whole time. So this is actually... So it's from our universe... since, you know, Ashley's kind of expanding out. And so this is actually the first anything I have from her line, because before it was for...
Wait, so is it our universe because it's his and hers, or is it our universe because it's cosplay material?
I think the first one, but also kids. Yeah, so anyhow, I like it. It's really nice and pretty cool because she's always the one who's buying the clothes and stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, they don't make any like fashionable stuff. It's usually like, oh, it's a t-shirt that says Star Wars on it. So got that. I saw Solo for a seventh time. And I also got a bunch of the little Hot Wheels vehicles that are awesome. I'm playing with
those. Are so hard to find right now where I'm at. I'm just like, I need to get the Falcon in the Lando form.
Yeah, see, I think I have them all. The only one that I may not have is I can't remember what it's called, but Moloch's speeder. I think they make that one and I don't have it yet. I managed to get the little patrol bike that was in the movie for like 10 seconds before he got all blowed up. And then, Han's speeder that he steals at the beginning of the movie. And then I got the AT hauler.
Spoilers!
Dude, we've already said Maul. I mean, what more can you do? They also have, in the same line, some of the older stuff from the prequel trilogy. So, like Maul's Sith Infiltrator. And then the AT-TE. So... pretty cool. I love these little things. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah, they are sick. They're mm-hmm. beautiful. See, and I want to get that Falcon one because I've had to modify a couple of my Micro Machine ones just so I could be like, and there it's lost the dish. It's Lando's.
Wow, you've had a big Star Wars week. And you know, one thing I've learned now that I've seen the cape on you, you know, the man doesn't make the cape. The cape makes the man. So
that is, yeah. There you go.
The capes.
Come on, Michael, sashay for us. I want to see. How long is this cape? Oh, no.
Look at that. Ooh, I thought, blue inside.
See, the collar. Oh, yeah. Dang, dude, you do look snazzy as hell.
I don't know. I mean,
Dracula for a second there, too.
maybe fat Dracula. I'm a little.
Well, like, at first, you know, when you're leaning up close to the camera, it looks like it's like one of those Polo Negro
yeah,
type collars.
Yeah,
colors.
It kind of does.
And then you lean back and you realize that it's like busting open. You're like, oh, is he just showing off his shirt? And you're like, no, that's pretty nice. Like, that's a nice fabric, and I can tell with your camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all like silky smooth looking. I like.
Okay, now I want to move on. All right, so my book is bound. Yeah, there's times where I go through a week and something happens, Star Wars related. I'm like, oh, this is going to be my Boba's bounty for this week. And then I forget what it is. And that's what I'm going through right now. Because I know there was something earlier this week that I was like, oh, this is my Boba's bounty. But I can't remember what it is. But so today we were, my oldest daughter, she's starting to look at colleges. So we went to the University of Georgia today and took a tour of the campus. Go Dogs. And I'm not a UGA person, but I'm just doing that. Anyway, but anyway,
go dads.
There you go. They say they said on the tour that they lose dads all the time during the tour. they get distracted and they fall behind. But anyway, we're taking a tour of the UGA campus, and then we were driving around, and my youngest daughter was counting things, and my kids, ever since the movie Solo has come out, they're obsessed with Solo cups. And my daughter is counting every Solo cup she sees abandoned somewhere along the campus or in front of the frat houses and stuff. And she's like, people around here don't know how to clean up their Solo cups. So that's my Boba's bounty, because we did refer to the Solo cups to the Solo movie. Which, nice, by the way, we did see Incredibles 2 last night, and it was good. Just saying. <That's>...
All right. Yeah, she's going to completely start looking past the Solo cups if she starts going to college there. Because I used to spend a good bit of time down there and over there, wherever it is in approximation to me. But back when I was in college, and yeah, there's a lot of discarded Solo cups around that entire all of Athens.
Solos of Star Wars stories laying around.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, guess what? After almost 2 hours, not quite, we're done. This is the end of the Star Wars Report, episode 335.
So sad.
Well, punch it, Chewie.
So punch it, Chewie. Any final words? Michael, where can people find you online?
Oh my gosh, all the places. So me personally, just Instagram and Twitter is the best place to find me. More Sizely over there. Of course, I do the Cloud City Casino podcast on this network. Got a new episode coming out tomorrow where we, Nate and I argue about Solo, and you know, we talk about the Respawn game that was just announced and a couple other things. And then also should be dropping today, I think, the Twin Sons transmission episode that Christy and I were both on. So even if you don't like listening to me, Christy will be on there, so maybe she'll make up for it.
Yeah, I think it's great that she got to see Ashley Eckstein this week. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty awesome. So, Matt, where can people find you? Well, wait. On the show today, you mentioned aggressive negotiations twice. You mentioned 602 Club. I guess that's the only show. Those are the only shows you have, right?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02, on Instagram under the same name. Both of those shows you can find me on. And then I've got a couple more. I've got The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. More than a couple, actually, because I've got Owl Post with Drea Kaufman talking about Harry Potter. And then last but not least, I have Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney talking about films through the lens of faith. So, yeah, you can find me all over the place.
And Mark, where can we find you?
Well, I do Marvel Cast, Earth's Mightiest Podcast with David Senden. And then, of course, Padawan's Perspective, which has been kind of on hiatus until my daughter broke her toe. So maybe we'll be doing some episodes real soon and beyond the films, as well as here on the Star Wars Report podcast. And everywhere else as a Logical Rogue, too.
Wait,
except for on Xbox, where my son has hijacked my account to play Fortnite all the time.
Wait, so your daughter broke her toe, and so we're going to get more podcasts because she isn't walking around? So she's going to be...
She dances a lot, and literally, like, tonight is the competition, and she broke it yesterday.
Oh, no.
So she got pulled from all her dances, and she's, yeah, it broke her heart. How'd she break it? I'm like, hey, you can't... And your bounce house, somebody else jumped onto her toe, and then they're looking at the... I mean, she fractured it good, too. It's like, ow. Turned all black, looks like an orichai. Like, yeah.
Okay, so another part, I do remember something about my Bubba's Bounty, but I didn't know if I should bring it up. That's why I think I forgot about it. But I'm going to mention it now, because it's the end of the show.
Here at the end, before we can taint everything
else. It's the end of the show, and so I'm going to mention it now. And by the way, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at @Admiral_Rex, but after this story, you may not want to follow me. So, you know, in The Empire Strikes Back, when the Millennium Falcon is going through the asteroids, and then all of a sudden it goes down through that tunnel, which is we now is the slug, but it's going through the tunnel, that round tunnel, and the lights come on. That vision was in my head all throughout Wednesday because I went to have a colonoscopy. And that's what I kept thinking of the whole time I was in there. And the nurses, they would prep me for it, and they'd say, now think of something that makes you happy, something relaxing.
So you want me to start playing the music right over top of this, right, Bruce?
And I think of Star Wars. That's my happy place. And so,
oh my
so
God.
I'm just going to ramp the outro music just right over this, right? Just drown it out. That's what you said?
Well, when I get back to listen to this, I'll see what you've done to it.
So this is the way you're saying... You say for the first time you had the epiphany that Han flew in the exit, out the entrance.
All right. What a way to end the show.
Man,
thanks for listening to the Star Wars Report, everybody. Come back next week where Bruce will tell us about
who God knows what.
At least you waited to the bitter end. Oh, my God.
All right, I'm pressing stop.
All I have to say is many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Oh, the smell.
Riding Star Tours. Bye-bye.